listening to Viral Podcasting, the place to go to learn how to generate a six-figure income or more from your podcast. To get the latest tips and information, go to viralpodcasting.com.
Welcome. You are listening to Viral Podcasting. This is show number 59, and Viral Podcasting is the place to go if you are looking to start a podcast, take it to the next level, or build massive audiences. You can do it all. Hey, if you haven't seen our book, go over to Amazon or go over to our site, viralpodcasting.com. Click the link. You'll see our book, Viral Podcasting, a proven process to earn six figures from your show. Yes, six figures, not three figures, not four figures or five. We're talking six figures or more. I've done it. I've showed others how to do it. So just email us with any questions, kl@carrielutz.com. Well, interesting things in the world of podcasting. You never know who you're going to meet. There are podcasts about everything under the planet and probably on top of the planet too. But this one's kind of interesting. I'm a music lover, you probably know. And person you're about to hear from, well, he's written a few books, one of which is Good Advice from Professional Wrestling. And there's actually volume one and volume two. Another is Pocket Cash. His name is Darren Paltrowitz. And his podcast is the Paltrowcast. And Darren, we're thrilled to have you on the show. Briefly, what is a Paltrowcast?
Carrie, thank you so much for having me on your show. With accolades like yours, it's really great that you're helping other people get to where they want to be. And the Paltrowcast, you know, I was just sitting around trying to think of what can I name this? You know, the main theme or the main line through the whole thing is that they're my interviews and it's a podcast. And, you know, you keep thinking and thinking and Paltrowitz podcast, Paltrowcast. And here we are.
Hey, you know, one of the things I talk about in Viral Podcasting is branding. And look, my main podcast is called financialsurvivalnetwork.com. I'm not plugging it. I'm just saying that's the name. If I had read my book before I started podcasting, I would have never called it that. Now it's 8 years later, 6,000 episodes later, have no choice. But I like the fact that hey, you got your name in there and it's some kind of cast. And I think it's just good branding that you've got. And I think you should keep it.
Thank you. I mean, the domains were available, the social media handles were available, and sometimes it's half the battle.
Yeah, it really is. So every podcaster I've ever spoken with has got a journey. How did your journey start? How did you wind up in this?
How did I wind up in podcasting or entertainment or both?
Well, so I assume one journey led to another.
You would be correct. Good assumption right there. I started writing for a bunch of magazines and websites in the early days of the internet when I was in high school. It was 20-ish years ago. And all that pretty much came out of I wanted free CDs. I wanted free concert tickets. And I wanted to be able to meet and or interview some of my heroes. Well, how can you do that without paying for that much stuff? You ask for press kits and you offer to do interviews and all that kind of stuff. So I started doing that 20 something years ago, took a few, you know, couple of year hiatuses along the way, but really, really doing it full throttle again, like 10 or so articles a week, most of those interviews. And at a certain point, my wife was kind of saying, you got all these interviews, ever thought about turning into a podcast? Cause you listen to so many podcasts. And I just realized, well, yeah, just because the person read the text of my article doesn't necessarily mean that they heard the interview or that they even paid, you know, full attention to the article. So slowly but surely, last year, I started turning all these interviews into a podcast.
Oh, wow. That's great. So you've done all these interviews, been in it, and it's further getting the word out about you and I guess this has become a passion of yours, hasn't it?
Absolutely. When you do things on a deadline or a timeline kind of based process like I do right now, you think, oh, I gotta get one of these done within the next 2 weeks. So I have to edit it, get it all together, do the HTML on the post. Ugh.
Yeah.
And then finally it's done and you get it out there and people write to you and go, love that interview. I never knew that about the person. Mm. You then go, oh man, this is awesome. It's like a creative outlet. And then you go, oh, I got to do another one of these. And the guests have to be good and it's got to sound great and all that. But I really am proud of having each episode out there and all that bleeds into the books and the writing and the other work I do.
Yeah. So they're all kind of connected and this is your brand. You are your brand effectively. So what is it that you're actually trying to accomplish here? Monetarily, you know, because you got to keep the lights on. What is it that you really want to do? And how are you going about doing it?
I've learned that good work leads to more work. And I personally enjoy working. Even though I live in a beach town here on Long Island, New York, called Long Beach, and I'm literally looking at the beach right now out the window, I don't like to sit back and do nothing. I really like writing and the craft of being creative and all that. So my goals are essentially to keep doing great work and keep working on projects that I'm fascinated with and about and all that. And just because I've interviewed more, you know, a lot of my heroes, that doesn't mean that there's not more of them that I can't meet and more press trips I can go on and more things I can do. So really, I'm just trying to do great work and hope it leads to more great work.
Hey, so how do you get to be on press trips? How do you get those freebies?
Well, the first step is having a good outlet. If you write for USA Today, of course they want you on these press trips because you might write for it for like one of the biggest newspapers in the country. And so, you know, if you can get an outlet, great. You're pretty much set as long as you're in the right databases. If you can't get that, well, then it's time to get creative. It's time to network and show all the great work you do and that you have a great readership and that you're reliable. If you go on a lot of these press trips, and I don't know if this is boring or putting you to sleep here. I could talk about this all day.
Please do.
Well, when you go on some of these trips, some of them are solo, some of them are group kind of trips. And you'll talk to the other people because then inevitably, if you're having 5-10 meals with these people over the course of the few days of the week, hey, who do you write for? What do you do? And some of them just go, oh, well, I'm an influencer. You go, what does that mean? Well, I've got hundreds of thousands of followers on my social media accounts, so I post photos and videos from my trips. And at first you get jealous and you go, wait, so you don't have to write an article. You just have to take a few photos and videos and you're done. And at first you're envious, and then you realize, wait, a lot of these people don't get invited back for a second or a third trip. Right. So they're not really playing the long-term game, a lot of these folks.
Well, you know, it's my other business is basically marketing junior miners and small publicly traded companies. I've done a lot of cannabis stocks, and it's very hard to quantify the efforts or the results of my efforts. I might do a podcast. Last one I did with a certain company got close to 8,000 downloads on it and over 1,100 YouTube views, which is pretty good. And it just so happens the price of the company went up. I don't claim any responsibility for it other than because mine are purely informative. The CEO, I interview him. He talks about what the company's doing. And if he goes over well, I mean, hey, I know how to do an interview. I know how to ask questions. The CEO, though, has to be the uber communicator to get the message out and really tell the story. Just so happens this company, you know, stock price went up. And like I say, probably little or nothing to do with what I had to say. But what's interesting is like the people get the information and it'll digest for like a week. It's not going to go up the next day. A week later, you'll start to see volume pick up and you start to see the price go up. And it's a fascinating thing. So my point is that influencers, it's virtually impossible to know unless you're selling a physical product, whether or not they succeeded. As far as when they have these press trips, they never know whether you're going to be a hero or a zero, as they say on Shark Tank, right?
Right. And I've been very fortunate to go on a lot of these kinds of press trips. That after you go on one of them, assuming you have a good time, you go, how can I get on the next one? And you're reaching out and saying, hey, where's the next invite? And, you know, you're begging and you'll take anything. And then eventually gets to one of these levels where you get more invites than you have time to go on these things. And you realize every time you go on one of these things, you've eaten like a king for, you know, 3-4 days. And you're kind of out of reality for a little bit when you're living the 4 or 5 star life. But yeah, a lot of this does show you, you know, on the positive side, what the world is like outside of your town, outside of your routine. So it really does help inspire me and network me. And, you know, it feeds into the podcast, it feeds into the other writing. So I really love doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel the same way. It's really an incredible experience. Tell me somebody you met through your podcast that you would have never otherwise met in your regular life. Who comes to mind? Obviously, there's a lot of those people.
That's a tough one because, to be honest, sometimes I get the interview for the podcast because I'm going to divvy it up into 2 or 3 different articles because they say the combined reach of that is huge. And when I do things that way, you know, getting an interview in person with somebody like Terry Crews, wait, what? Me? Terry Crews? I get to meet that guy or, you know, Gene Simmons because I'm a huge Kiss fan. When those kinds of things happen, you know, it's just such a wonderful experience. And, you know, Mike Love from the Beach Boys, great guy. If you read Rolling Stone, you're trained to believe Brian Wilson's the good guy in the Beach Boys, end of story. No, Mike Love's a great guy. Mm-hmm. You know, one other example, last week I posted an episode that had William Zabka, aka Billy Zabka. You ever seen the show Cobra Kai?
Yeah. Oh, I love that show. Well, the update. So they just had, if you're not familiar with Cobra Kai, so it's the continuation of The Karate Kid 30 years later with the same two people, Ralph Macchio, and I can't remember the other guy's name. And
William Zabka. Yeah.
Oh, that's him. Right. And there's the original leader of the Cobra Kai dojo. I can't remember his name either, but
real name Martin Cove, but right. John Kreese.
Yeah, John Kreese. And so they just released the second season like a month ago on YouTube. It's only available on YouTube Premium. And like the great thing about Google, whether you love them or hate them, they do know how to put enough money into a production to have first-rate production values. I mean, the production values in the show are higher than the production values were in the movie. It's so amazing. So with that explained, so actually talking to this guy, interviewing him, was really kind of a trip, huh?
Man, he couldn't have been nicer, friendlier. It just keeps reaffirming, you know, one thing I keep learning over and over again, which is the villains and the heels, whatever you want to call them, the bad guys, they're usually the nicest people on earth. And, you know, that bled into writing the book, Good Advice for Professional Wrestling. But you're trained to think good guy is a nice person. And I've had experiences where it's kind of the opposite. And all that makes you think about great an actor a lot of these villains in movies and TV were.
Oh, yeah. You got to always remember, first and foremost, they're acting. It's not real. That's not who they are. And yeah, you really start to think these are like bad guys. I'm trying to remember guys who got typecast into bad roles. Like I was reading about Sean Connery the other day, and he really wasn't that enthusiastic about continuing on with Bond. He had done 5 of them, and then he was trying to do other movies. I don't think they were all that successful. Some of them were. And then they made him an offer that he couldn't refuse. And that one became Never Say Never. And that was really a little gag on the fact that Sean Connery said he'd never do another 007 movie again. And then the other one, which I think it was You Only Live Twice, maybe. I'm not sure. I don't remember what the last one was. He did 7 of them, but he really didn't like it because people would say, oh, there's James Bond walking down the street, right?
You know? Yeah. Exactly, a great point right there. And it all really changes your perspective. And sometimes when I've prepped for an interview and you think, oh, well, this is like a really smiley, happy guy, so he's going to be the greatest guy. And then you get him on the phone and the second or third question, they cut you off and they go, you're going to ask me about my new album, right? Okay. So they can diffuse anything with a smile. So interviewing, as you know, as you're learning from me right now, it keeps you on your toes. I mean, you never know what kind of a mean guy like myself you're going to have on the phone, right?
Yeah, because their public persona is often not what their private person is really all about. So one guy, I've been reading his work for years. I can think of two of them. And I finally got to interview them. And my God, it was like the worst interview I ever did, because I thought I was interviewing a different person than I wound up interviewing. And, I like the guy, though. His writing is great. I've always been a fan of his. But wow, that was a wake-up call. So just because somebody appears to be one way doesn't mean they're going to be that way in the interview. So interviewing tactics, interviewing techniques, what is it that you do? Do you write questions out, or do you just bullet point? How do you set the tenor of the interview?
I've done every sort of format or experiment ever. When I was a teenager, I wrote out every single question in the exact order.
Boring. So, boring.
Yeah. it actually would work out well most of the time because I knew what story I was trying to tell. It wasn't so painful. Then eventually I evolved to bullet points. Mm-hmm. Then I eventually evolved to, I know how it's going to start and I know how it's going to end.
Exactly. But
the most important part for the whole thing, I feel, is knowing the constraints. And those are usually, how long do you have with the person? Mm-hmm. Is it in person, over the phone, over email? Is it during a junket where they've done 10 interviews? Is it while they're riding to the airport? Like you figure that kind of stuff so you can gauge what mood are they going to in, what level of patience are they going to have? And most importantly, are they promoting something? And is a publicist on the line with them?
Oh, we don't allow that. We never have a publicist on the line ever. I've never done it. And I love when they try to give you the questions, like, oh, yeah, sure, we'll take your questions. And then I just toss them. I look at them, and I might weave in a couple of them, but it's like, I'm not asking your questions. No, this is like not going to be another canned interview with a script that sounds scripted and fake a mile away, right? Being real, isn't that the most important thing?
It depends. There's some people that you do want the realness from, and then there's other people you don't want the realness from.
I'll buy that. So
if I'm talking to, Gene Simmons from Kiss, and he's saying, and of course, I'm the richest man, I'm too rich to care. You don't want to go, well, how much are you worth?
How rich are you?
Prove it.
How rich are you?
You just want to go like, he's being Gene Simmons, and that's awesome.
He's being himself. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, so I always say to people when you do an interview, what is the takeaway? What do you want your audience to think about or feel or just experience? What are they going to get out of it, right? Isn't that the most important thing? The audience has to, your listeners got to get something from this thing that either didn't know, didn't feel, weren't aware of, or just thought they didn't care about. But you're going to give them this, and it's kind of your gift, right?
I am totally in agreement with you. I love that you said that. That's something that I ask sometimes. So I'm really infuriated when I'm on a red carpet and it's people from like In Touch or People Magazine, those kinds of tabloid weeklies. Fake stuff. And they're going to take 10 to 15 minutes of that person's time. And the reality is they're just going to put one or two quotes and that's it. I read one of them the other day, on the band, the Goo Goo Dolls, and the whole article was three sentences. And you got to think that artist spent 10 to 20 minutes on the phone And it was three sentences. What an insult.
Lost on the cutting room floor. Yeah.
Well, seriously, yeah. Man.
Hey, so, you know, one thing that I notice that aspiring podcasters do way too much, over edit, over produce. How much production do you do post-production on an interview?
That's a really great question. It goes case by case. I've had some interviews where I just totally, it is exactly what happened. I left in my ums and ahs, didn't cut out a single thing. I've had others where I went, whoa, no one is going to be able to listen to this. That person went on for far too long about their creative process, and this is going to put everyone to sleep. So I think what I usually do is I say, the audio that I'm going to use for this is probably 8 to 12 minutes, and I'll have the person on the phone for 15 to 20.
Right.
And I always believe in leaving people wanting more, not overkilling. I don't want to see any band on the planet play for 3 hours. I'd rather see like a tight 70, 80 minutes. How about you?
Yeah, well, so my thing is, I don't know, I just have this innate sense. Like, I pretend I'm like that reporter who's on the scene of the car accident. All right. He's not going to do another take, and it's going out live. There isn't any way to edit. Okay. So you got to just get it right the first time or forget it. Now, I will do verbal, you know, splotches and whatever. And I'll, you know, use Audition. So I mark it on there and my producer gets rid of it. But outside of that, it's like every word is going to count. All of it's going to happen. And because honestly, I just don't have the time and I really don't feel like going back and really chopping it up. I know I could do it, of course, because I knew the interview and I could chop out. I used to chop out a lot of stuff and every breath I'd chop out. And then my radio coach, Valerie Geller, told me, you know, you're overproducing it. You know, people know that you're cutting stuff out and they don't like it when they hear stuff being cut out because they think, well, what isn't he telling me? What isn't he letting me know? Right. And that like led to a reaffirmation of, hey, you got to do this like your life depended upon it. So, but hey, I'm not being critical of your practice. It's just what works for me. I'm doing 3 interviews, sometimes 4 per day. So I have to get it right. And hey, so prepping for the interview, like the great thing about the internet now is even if you don't know who the heck this person is, unless they are a social media ghost, you just go to their website, you go look them up. They're going to be there, tons of information about them. And right. The, what else do you do? Like if it, I guess if it's music, you listen to their music or video, whatever, how else do you mentally prep for an interview?
Sometimes I'm lucky to have a mutual friend or a personal experience related to the person that I'm speaking with. I'm impressed that you do 4 a day. You know, I do, you know, 1 to 3 a day and people think that I'm insane. So
not every day.
No judgment there on 3, you, Carrie.
Just 3 days a week, not sometimes 4. Usually it's 3 to 4 per day. And then Thursday and Friday, I don't do any production because it's intense. You know, it will wear you out. It definitely will. Everybody thinks, oh, you know, I can talk. I could be on the radio. I could have my own show. It doesn't work that way, right?
I could write a screenplay. I can write a book. Yeah. I could star in a movie. Yeah, people can do all this stuff. Are they going to put in the work and actually start it and finish it? That's a whole other story. But, so true. You know, going back to your question about, you know, prep and all that, you know, I do like to throw in something personalized or distinct about it, not the whole interview, but a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, earlier today, I was talking to Steve Lukather, who's the guitarist and one of the founding members of the band Toto.
Right.
And he also played on Thriller by Michael Jackson, I think thousands of albums. Legendary guy.
Wow.
And you know, if he's been famous for 35, 40 years, he's been asked everything to death.
You
so
would think he could interview himself probably and do a better job than most people do, right?
Totally, totally agreed. And luckily, he's like a funny, interesting guy. And I asked him outright, about something that he said on stage when I saw him in 2006 in another country. And he was warm to that. And I also told him that I got into his band as a result of an album that they did, I think, in 2006 or 2007. He's like, really? And then I think to one that I did a week ago, the Goo Goo Dolls, they're going to get a second mention in this interview, which is crazy. Nice guys. I'm not a huge fan. It's just a coincidence. But at the beginning of the interview, I told the singer of the Goo Goo Dolls, so I was at your show that you did at this reggae festival in St. Kitts. And then he just starts laughing. And I think that by laying it out right of, don't worry, I'm not going to ask you who your influences are and all that, that usually the interviews are going to go a little bit better if they start off stronger.
Right. Sure. So you want to start out strong and take it from there. And okay, so difficult topics, difficult subjects, right? There are people who are just really turned out to be a pain. What do you think the best way to handle the hostile or uncooperative interview subject is? The kind of one that says, you know, you meet a girl at the party, say, hi, how are you? I'm fine. Yeah. You live around the area? No. Well, what are you doing here? I just came by. You know, and they're like totally unresponsive to your charm, totally resistant. And you want to, you know, you're dying and you got to do something to shake things up to get them to come out of that loop that they're in. Right. So what do you do?
What I used to do is different than what I do now. What I used to do was just feel so ashamed. Oh, I did a bad job. That came out terribly.
No, that's,
and now I have a different approach to beating myself up, which is going, oh, that's hilarious. Let's put that out there so the world can see what a dingus they are. Yeah. And, you know, I'll give you one. Do you want to hear an example of something that happened?
Sure.
This is kind
Love
of bad
it.
Mouthing somebody famous. I don't know if you like that.
It's all right. We like to hear.
Okay. So the Eagles, you know, one of the greatest bands ever.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. I'm super fascinated by the Eagles because all those guys have done interesting things before, during, and after the Eagles. And the bass player, Timothy B. Schmidt, has sung on tons and tons and tons of albums. You know, he sang the David Crosby part on the Crosby, Stills, Nash record, uncredited. You know, such an interesting musical career. So I started off by asking him 2-3 questions about that part of his career. And he cuts me off after the third question.
Yeah.
And he goes, Darren, can we talk about my new album? And okay. I was mortified when that happened. And then now that I've told that story a little bit, I totally laugh about it. And I left that in the article. It ran on Guitar World. And my editor, should I say former editor, he was not happy about that. But then everybody else I've ever told that story to, they loved it. They said, like, finally, you're not, you know, glorifying somebody who's short with interviewers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. You know, hey, we could go on with these stories all day. So just one tip, one final tip from you, building an audience, connecting with your audience. How do you do it?
Some people run focus groups and they say, what do you want to see? What do you want to do? And then there's other people say, I'm going to do what I want, and it's going to naturally and organically find an audience. It's for the long term. And I'm kind of the second category in that, because I think that niches can turn into great cottage industries. So the people that are the guests on my podcast and the interviews I do, they're generally things that I want to do. Very rarely are they, you know, incentivized trade-offs. It does happen, but, you know, I'm talking to Terry Crews because I want to talk to Terry Crews, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So there's a lot of things you can do, a lot of tricks, etc. Hey, we want to find out more about you, want to connect, listen to your podcast. Where is the best place to find you these days, Darren?
www.paltrowitz.com. It'll lead you to the book, Good Advice from Professional Wrestling. It'll lead you to the Paltrowcast with Darren Paltrowitz podcast. It'll lead to my articles, et cetera. Or, you know, at Paltrowitz on Twitter, at Paltrowitz on Instagram, et cetera.
All right. Excellent. Hey, well, any questions or comments on anything Darren had to say or anything you've heard here or about your podcast? Hey, we'll do a free air check of your podcast. I know I offered to do it for somebody. We lost communication. So it was Tiger Something Podcast. Just send me an email, kl@kerrylutz.com. Love to listen to your podcast, give you some free, unbiased, unvarnished advice. Just hope that you can handle the truth, right? The truth is always what counts. Darren, really appreciate you coming on. And hey, we'll talk to you again.
Kerry, it has been such a pleasure. Keep up the great work and keep in touch.
This has been another episode of Viral Podcasting. Be sure to visit us at viralpodcasting.com.